This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A peace deal negotiated by the U.S. and Middle East partners. Now the question, will it hold? There's still skepticism inside Israel's legislature. Former Israeli ambassador to the U.S. and former Knesset member Michael Oren.
The Israeli cabinet, we are a democracy, different parties in that cabinet, some to more to the right, even the prime minister. We're concerned. We're concerned about the next stage of this agreement. Yes, all the hostages returned, but the big question is going to remain, can Hamas be disarmed?
New York Attorney General Letitia James indicted on at least one count of alleged fraud by President Trump's handpicked prosecutor, the same one who charged another of Trump's enemies, former FBI Director James Comey, with lying to Congress. And the shutdown drags on. A seventh vote to fund the government failed Thursday in the Senate. And with senators leaving Washington Thursday night and the holiday Monday, there won't be another vote to reopen the government till Tuesday at the soonest. This is ABC News. A Connecticut woman is free on $1 million bond. Kristen Hogan is accused of trying to poison the father of her child with antifreeze in his wine. ABC's Aaron Katursky has more.
The 34-year-old man later telling investigators he believed Hogan poisoned him so she would become the full owner of the residence and would gain full-time custody of their child. Police say Hogan searched the internet for potassium cyanide and monoethylene glycol, as well as how much monoethylene glycol would kill you. Prosecutors say she initially claimed she needed the substance to clean the carpet at her mother's house, but eventually told investigators she never intended to kill her partner, but just wanted to make him sick as payback for him being mentally abusive.
The IRS has announced new income tax standard deductions for 2026. The standard deduction rises to $16,100 for individuals, $32,200 for married couples who file jointly. Someone who earns the same income next year would likely owe a few hundred dollars less in taxes. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 1490 WLCX.
Concern about injured Packers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers host the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday, kickoff at 3:25. Matt LaFleur was asked why the team's place kicker, Brandon McManus, has been added to the injury list.
Brandon McManus listed on the injury report. I'm assuming it's from those tackles that he had to make in the game.
This is not from the tackles, no.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a major concern right now, so we'll see how he's doing today and tomorrow, and we'll have a plan ready to go.
I asked McManus what happened to him and the injury to his kicking leg.
I was kicking, warming up. I had kickoffs earlier in the day, and then I was warming up for field goals. I kind of felt a tug against my quad. I gave it a couple minutes, tried again. I just shut it down for the day. Didn't want to make it worse.
Baseball, Brewers against the Cubs tonight at Wrigley Field. If Milwaukee wins, they advance to the National League Championship next week. If they lose, it's Game 5 in Milwaukee this coming Saturday. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Catch Farm Report updates throughout the day from the Midwest Farm Report right here on 1490 WLCX.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly cloudy, an isolated shower or two, and a low in the low 50s. Sun's back for tomorrow and Saturday. Highs in the mid-60s. Highs in the upper 60s and breezy with increasing clouds Sunday and another shower chance. It's 55 right now.
Todd Alba.
Hey everybody, you've heard the voice. First and 10 Wisconsin and Ron Dane. Now meet the man behind the voice, Mike Mankey, Badger PA announcer, in studio with us next time
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
As veterans, we're no strangers to helping others.
That's what we were taught, service before self.
But we do have one question for the veterans listening.
When is the last time you reached out for help?
If you or someone you know needs resources, whether it's for stress, finances, employment, or mental health, don't wait. Reach out.
Find more information at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach.
Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
State Senator Jeff Smith. We're talking about the Veteran Housing and Recovery Program. Republicans blocked funding for this.
They instead sent the governor a 16-page letter blaming him for this problem. Well, it was in his budget. Once the budget is out of his office and in their hands, it's up to them. Our job is to manage the funding. We can do it, but the governor can't. So it's avoiding our own responsibility by not addressing that.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home
for
the
Todd Alba
Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
They wish to break the entire thing. That is the objective. It isn't about efficiency. It's about breaking it. And it's about breaking it for what end?
Now, The Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Gerrymandering is bad for everybody.
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
I'm grossly discouraged, and I have given up on any justice in our system. It doesn't exist anymore.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome back if you're rejoining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, there has been so much action going on in our court system and in the sphere of public debate about Donald Trump's deployment of, I don't know, National Guard from Texas and Illinois or California and Illinois and maybe some from California and Oregon and differing court decisions. And what does all of this mean in our democratic republic? Well, we've got a guest that's going to help us unpack all of this afternoon. I've been very much looking forward to talk to him. His name is Josh Braver. He is an assistant professor of law at my alma mater, the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome to the program, Josh. Thanks for making time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Let's start at the beginning. I just want to refresh everybody's recollection. Donald Trump, when he addressed the room full of about 800 of our military top brass, as the phrase would be, basically said to them, no problem deploying the military on our cities or in our cities. Let's take a listen to a short montage of Donald Trump making these statements, both at Quantico and in other circumstances. Take a listen.
Well, we're going in. I didn't say when. We're going in. When you lose, look, I have an obligation. This isn't a political thing. I have an obligation. If the governor of Illinois would call me up, I would love to do it. Now, we're going to do it anyway. We have the right to do it because I have an obligation to protect this country.
We're under invasion from within. No different than a foreign enemy, but more difficult in many ways because they don't wear uniforms. And I told Pete, we should use some of these dangerous cities as training grounds for our military, National Guard, but military.
Quite shocking. And this, just yesterday, in the Oval Office, about the invocation of the Insurrection Act. Take a listen.
We're going to make Chicago really great again, and we're going to stop this crime. Then we're going to go to another one, and we're going to go city by city. We're going to have safe cities.
The Insurrection Act, under what conditions or terms would you...
Well, I'd do it if it was necessary. So far, it hasn't been necessary. But we have an Insurrection Act for a reason. If I had to enact it, I'd do that. If people were being killed and courts were holding us up or governors or mayors were holding us up, sure, I'd do that.
And, again, ahead of his remarks before our top brass at Quantico, Donald Trump threatened to fire some of our military generals. Listen to this.
So I'm going over. I'm going to be meeting with generals and with admirals and with leaders. And if I don't like somebody, I'm going to fire them right on the spot.
And of course, then, before these very generals and top brass, basically said, if you don't like me, you can walk out, but there goes your career. And so take a listen to this last bit.
Never walked into a room so silent before. This is very, don't laugh. You're not allowed to do that. You know what? Just have a good time. And if you want to applaud, you applaud. And if you want to do anything you want, you can do anything you want. And if you don't like what I'm saying, you can leave the room. Of course, there goes your rank. There goes your future.
So Donald Trump, not known for being a guy that's real specific about what he's saying, Professor Braver. But what I wanted to do was just talk with you to begin before we get into these court cases and what might come next. And are we at a tipping point? Is why do we have civilian control of the military? And why is it that our constitutional structure requires, for example, Congress to declare war? Why is it that the president does not have plenary authority, as claimed by Stephen Miller on CNN earlier this week, over our military, over our National Guard? Why is it the case that governors generally are the ones to request intercession or assistance from the National Guard? Why are we structured like this?
We're a democracy, and the idea of a democracy is that we have civilian control of the military. How that control is divided up is a question about who's best on the ground, who knows best what's going on, are the situation dire or enough of an emergency to make this happen? And the idea about our military in terms of being deployed domestically, when the military is put on America's streets, is the long tradition has been that it should only be a last resort. It should only be when civilian law enforcement is completely or nearly completely incapable of enforcing the law. Think about riots like in 1991 in Los Angeles or in 1968. These are moments where civilian law enforcement really was completely and totally overwhelmed. It can't be just because an ICE agent is having some trouble enforcing immigration law. That's not enough. The reason why that exists is because our military, I'll say it's for two reasons. Our military are not trained in civilian law enforcement. They're not trained in crowd control. The mission of our military is to fight and win our nation's war. Their job is to kill people. For our police, they too might have to kill people, but that's an unfortunate necessity. That's a tragedy. That's something that should be tried to be avoided at all costs. And the second reason is that our military should remain nonpartisan. It's very important that the military has the trust of both Republicans and both Democrats. And intervening in controversies about Black Lives Matter, about enforcement of immigration, other civilian law enforcement, it really sullies the military's reputation. It really associates them with one side in our nation's culture wars.
Folks, again, if you're just joining us, I have an expert on the civil-military relationship in our constitutional republic. He is Professor Josh Braver of UW Law School. You said something that I think is so important for all of us to remember. The military is supposed to be nonpartisan. It is supposed to be that to ensure that there is public trust in our military, and so that it frankly, it is a bulwark against slipping into authoritarian dictatorships where a single party controls or a single elected official controls the military and uses it for their own personal political ends. We're seeing courts right now grappling with these factual allegations coming from the administration about unrest. You said the military, the National Guard, only used as a last resort when civil law enforcement is no longer capable of enforcing the law, when they are completely overrun. That is simply not what is happening in these cities. And you see courts grappling with this. And here's my question to you, Professor. To me, and I think to many folks who want to be clear-eyed about this, the fact that that set of predicate facts, overrun and completely incapable local law enforcement, that is not true. So what is making it so difficult for courts to acknowledge that and conclude that what the president has been doing is indeed illegal?
It's a fantastic question. Let me give you two answers. The first is that old habits die hard. You know, the courts have long existed in a world in which the presidency could be trusted to use its discretion, to use restraint. These categories about last resort, only when civil authorities have failed, they're part of long traditions within the executive branch, long-standing guidances, legal memos. And we're really in a new world where the Trump administration has systematically sidelined those offices, ignored those guidelines. And so all the reasons for the trust that legitimately existed before, you know, it's a very difficult situation for a court to be in where it's going to try and interfere with the president on these matters. And so it's a much easier world for the courts to have a president that is going to, for the most part, be within boundaries, and you could mostly stay out of the line of fire. That's the second reason, which is that we have grown up in a world in which we think of courts as being very powerful, but it is very easy for the president to defy courts. This is a problem that we really struggled with in the founding era. And so what courts would like to do is not to be put in a position where they're in a position where the president so prioritizes a certain policy that they'll just end up defying the court. Because the court's orders are not self-reinforcing. They rely on the president to comply out of its own will, right? The court has no police force. It has no army. That's the reason why the founding fathers said it was the least dangerous branch. And so they would rather try, on the most part, to only force the issue when it's absolutely necessary. But we are in a world where deference no longer makes sense, and we're getting very close to it being absolutely necessary. They keep trying half measures. The hope is that it will slow down Donald Trump until other actors can jump in who have more power, someone like Congress, someone like the governors. But there becomes a certain point in which their back is against the wall, and they're going to have to stand up and call a lie, and that there's not a rebellion, that they are able to enforce the law.
I feel like each day, Professor, we inch closer and closer and closer to that point. I feel like collectively, as a constitutional republic, that we got closer to the point of, do we actually have open conflict between branches of government this week, when Attorney General Bondi refused to answer very basic questions about will you direct your Department of Justice and provide guidance to the White House that they absolutely must follow court orders even when they are under appeal. What was your, and we've got a smidge over a minute left, what was your reaction to the Attorney General, aside from what was clearly like the partisan rhetoric of that? And there was a lot of just theater that was happening there, if we're being candid. But at the root of this was her unwillingness to respond to legitimate congressional oversight and her unwillingness to answer the most fundamental question, which is the administration's obligation under our Constitution and oath that they all take to follow court orders.
If an administration doesn't follow court orders, we are in a constitutional crisis. And I don't use that term lightly. It's a term that's thrown around all the time. And right. We have constitutional conflicts all the time. But one clear marker of when we are in a crisis is when there is an open and flagrant violation of the Supreme Court's orders. And so far, the Trump administration has steered within barely the lines of following the letter, if not the spirit, of the Supreme Court's orders. And it's a little bit disturbing if the administration seems to be backing away from giving Congress those kinds of guarantees.
What about the lower court orders? There seems to be, frankly, open disdain for lower court orders that they do not agree with, and open flouting of those orders. Certainly, the Oregon judge's ruling, that was a Trump-appointed judge, and you know, just reading around the ruling, much to the ire of that judge.
Yeah, I think part of the issue, even though I think the lower court orders have been obeyed in general, the Supreme Court has been aggressively turning back those lower court orders for a variety of reasons. And so the authority of the lower courts have been undercut in some sense by the Supreme Court.
That in and of itself, the failure of our Supreme Court to support and empower the lower courts and to require the administration to follow those orders is worthy of note. We're going to talk about what this portends, what comes next. What comes next in Chicago, and maybe what's coming right here to Wisconsin. Folks, you're going to want to stay tuned. I'm with Professor Josh Braver, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Eagle 1490 AM.
When it comes to vaping, the truth can get clouded. So let's make it clear. Vaping is not safe for youth.
Because vaping can put microscopic particles into your lungs.
And dangerous things like metals into your body.
And nicotine, which can harm a person's brain development through their mid-20s.
With appealing flavors, high nicotine levels, and lots of promotion on social media.
Many kids think vaping is harmless, but it's not.
So talk to your kids about the risks of vaping.
Because when you talk, they hear you.
Learn more at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Dr. Kristen Lierley.
At what point are we as a society going to stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, something's wrong here. This is just the latest attack on women, on trying to control our bodies. They want women to have more babies. They don't want us to have birth control. They don't want us to get abortions. They don't want us to take medications. They want us to be in pain. They don't want us to have hospitals to be able to go to. They're defunding all of our rural hospitals.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Ahoo, this is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we share stories from Turtle Island highlighting the people and issues shaping our communities. From protecting water to treaty rights and preserving languages and traditions, we cover it all. Hear voices like Arvina Martin of Emerge Wisconsin, Dr. Stately, Robert Lilligren, and more. Because Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
I was stuck in a state of panic and endless rituals, so I made the call.
Mental health care works when you make the call. Visit mentalhealthcareworks.org. A message from the American Psychiatric Association Foundation.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Farm news that impacts you and your community from the Midwest Farm Report throughout your day on 1490 WLCX.
This is what lacrosse is talking about. This is Eagle 1490. Join the family. Civic Media has a number of great jobs across the state. Open now at civicmedia.us/careers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. For the rest of this half hour, I continue our conversation with our special guest, Professor Josh Braver, an expert in the relationship between civil authorities and the military. He is an assistant professor of law at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Thanks for sticking around with us, Josh. Before the break, we were getting into the current moment and the fact that we've now got Texas National Guard in the Chicagoland area. We've got differing court orders from Illinois, a federal judge in Illinois, a federal judge in Oregon. We've got a Supreme Court that to date has not really supported the lower federal courts or required strict adherence of the Trump administration to lower courts orders. And we seem to be at this inflection point. Literally, we've got armed soldiers from one state about to square off against protesters in another state whose governor doesn't want those National Guard members there. A president whose deputy chief of staff is claiming absolute power to direct Guards members wherever he wants, despite the fact that that is not what the law says. How close are we to one of these constitutional sort of bright line tipping points? How dangerous is this moment? And really, how strong as a legal matter is the president's assertion that he can do whatever he wants with whatever state's National Guard?
I'll start with the second on the law. So the law here is very clear. It sets out three conditions under which you can nationalize the Guard. One is invasion. There's clearly no invasion here. The administration's not even claiming there's an invasion in their court cases. The second is rebellion. And the third is unable with the regular forces to to execute the laws of the United States. I really don't think, I don't want to play down the levels of resistance to ICE agents, but calling this a rebellion is very far-fetched. You know, we've had things that maybe we've called rebellions in the past, the whiskey rebellion. This is where literally people are being tarred and feathered and they can't enter the city in any way. And George Washington has tried to send negotiators and they've been chased out and tarred and feathered. So the bar here is pretty high. And the president is unable with regular forces to execute the laws of the United States. You know, that means you have to try with the regular forces and they have to significantly fail. It can't just be that they're impeded or there's resistance, which happens every day to law enforcement. So as a matter of law, if you apply these criteria seriously, especially in a place like Portland, I mean, in Los Angeles, I don't want to play it down. There are people trying to seriously use physical force to enter the building. They're trapping ICE agents in cars. There are Molotov cocktails. I still don't think that's a rebellion. I still don't think it meets the criteria. But in Portland, it's people basically milling around. And insofar as they get rowdy, police officers are arresting them and taking them off the territory. So there's just no real plausible case that in Portland you have the criteria necessary for the president to federalize the guard.
All of this leads me to the question about the Insurrection Act and what the law there is. In my opinion, and based on conversations with folks like yourself, it is very clear that the legal prerequisites to the president's deployment of the National Guard against civilian protesters has not been met. I think it's debatable in LA, given the geographic scope and the fact that it was a very small proportion of the protesters, but it's not met in Chicago. It's clearly not met in Portland. It clearly isn't going to be met in Milwaukee or other places. The fact that the president has deployed these forces exclusively in Democratic-leaning cities, and his now promise or the guise of all of this being about immigration enforcement and his promise that, oh, yeah, if I think it's necessary, I'll invoke the Insurrection Act. What is the Insurrection Act for? And does it have anything to do with immigration enforcement at all?
The Insurrection Act is a way that we've been talking about federalizing the National Guard in these cities. That was the statute I was talking about earlier.
Yes.
The Insurrection Act is about sending in the army itself. The Marines, the active duty soldiers whose normal job day to day are professionals in fighting wars. And so that's the distinction between the Insurrection Act and the other statute. The Insurrection Act is written very broadly. It is written in ways that can be interpreted as giving the president a great deal of discretion to send them in for obstructing or impeding the execution of the laws. But it's never been used that way. It would be a serious violation of precedent. And the executive branch as a whole, its lawyers have opinion upon opinion piled up saying, you cannot use this recklessly. We have to really think about what its intention was, what its context was, and what the precedents are. And the precedents are clearly things like, as I was mentioning before, riots in which the police can no longer handle it. Places where entire areas of the city are being shut off. Think about the Seattle Autonomous Zone. And think about it, if it had been done where the Seattle police had really tried to move in rather than wait a few days and then moved in and cleared it out, right? Maybe they tried to move in again and again and couldn't do it. That's just not what we have. And so the president is pushing the law to the limit on the Insurrection Act, interpreting it in ways that it's maybe could be plausible by its text, but goes way beyond what presidents and Department of Justice lawyers have long advised exactly not to do.
If the president invokes the Insurrection Act under facts similar to substantially current facts, do we have a constitutional crisis?
I think we have a crisis for the military. I think we have a crisis in civil-military relations, that we are at risk of discrediting a force that we need to protect ourselves against foreign adversaries. And without a good military, we're in real trouble.
Folks, he'll be back again, I certainly hope. Professor Josh Braver of the University of Wisconsin Law School. We continue to discuss this topic. What it means if the National Guard shows up on the streets of Milwaukee or Madison next. Join us, 855-752-4842. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matinee on Air.
You're listening to 1490 WLCX, La Crosse's home for mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A peace deal negotiated by the U.S. and Middle East partners. Now the question, will it hold? There's still skepticism inside Israel's legislature. Former Israeli ambassador to the U.S. and former Knesset member Michael Oren.
The Israeli cabinet, we are a democracy, different parties in that cabinet, some to, more to the right, even the prime minister. We're concerned. We're concerned about the next stage of this agreement. Yes, all the hostages returned, but the big question is going to remain, can Hamas be disarmed?
New York Attorney General Letitia James indicted on at least one count of alleged fraud by President Trump's handpicked prosecutor, the same one who charged another of Trump's enemies, former FBI Director James Comey, with lying to Congress. And the shutdown drags on. A seventh vote to fund the government failed Thursday in the Senate. And with senators leaving Washington Thursday night and a holiday Monday, there won't be another vote to reopen the government till Tuesday at the soonest. This is ABC News.
The Cubs and the crew at 2-2. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. It happened again. First inning, the Brewers' Freddie Peralta on the mound. Bottom of the first, two men on. The Cubs' Ian Happ at the plate on TBS.
With a drive, right field, way back there, gone! Ian Happ takes Freddie Peralta deep for the second time in the series, and the Cubs lead 3-0.
The Cubs went on to win last night 6-0 to force a Game 5 tomorrow night in Milwaukee. Manager Pat Murphy.
Going into a winner-take-all Game 5, how do you guys get that momentum back on your side?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that you can't force. Momentum in baseball happens based on what's on the field. Hopefully, the tables will turn when we get into Game 5 at our place.
NBA, the Bucks with another preseason win, 117-111 over the Pistons at Fiserv Forum. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. One battle after another seems to be the movie with the most early Oscar buzz. According to Variety, the critic's darling and really fun movie start to finish is on track to potentially receive as many as 14 Academy Award nods. If it happens, it would tie the record for the most all time held by Titanic, All About Eve, and La La Land. Six of those nominations could come in the acting category. Five of the potential acting nominees are well-seasoned, if not previous winners. But the big story is breakout star of the film, Chase Infinity, who could draw a Best Actress nod. Her two female co-stars, Regina Hall and Tiana Taylor, are favorites to draw nominations in the Best Supporting Actress category. Leonardo DiCaprio is expected to be nominated for Best Actor, with co-stars Sean Penn and Benicio Del Toro possibly receiving Best Supporting Actor nominations. That would give the film six nominations for acting, which is unprecedented. If you haven't seen this movie, I highly recommend it. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
1490 WLCX, real news and great conversation for La Crosse, and home to mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly cloudy, an isolated shower or two, and a low in the low 50s. Sun's back for tomorrow and Saturday. Highs in the mid-60s. Highs in the upper 60s and breezy with increasing clouds Sunday and another shower chance. Currently 57 degrees.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey everybody, Todd Allball here. If you've been to a Wisconsin sports event, especially a football game, you've heard his voice.
First and 10, Wisconsin.
That's Badger Public Address announcer Mike Mankey. Join us Friday afternoon at 2:30 as we catch up with the Badger legend during UW Homecoming Week. How does he come up with those iconic calls?
Run, Dane!
And what are his best Badger moments? Join us for a conversation with Mike Mankey Friday at 2:30 on the Todd Allball Show.
Pat Kreitlow.
Friday morning, Mike Clemens will have all the details on tonight's Game 4 at Wrigley between the Brewers and Cubs, and preview Sunday's Packer game against the Bengals.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Problem is not all inside your head. It is happening in real time, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Big thanks to Professor Josh Braver of the University of Wisconsin Law School, helping us understand the relationship and why we have civil leadership of our military and the fact that we may be approaching inch by inch quite a constitutional crisis. In Professor Braver's words, the military, the National Guard, should only be used as an absolute last resort when civil law enforcement is incapable of enforcing the law. We simply do not have those facts on the ground in Portland or in Chicago, and certainly not here in Milwaukee. We're going to get into some of the lies that are being told by the administration about the factual circumstances. And this matters. It matters a lot, because if we're going to have any fidelity to our system of laws, if we expect presidents to follow the law, especially when it's not a president that you agree with, then an administration's willingness to lie about the facts that either trigger certain presidential powers or don't, we need to be really concerned about that. So I want to get into that, but in the realm of, oh my gosh, what is even happening? Excuse me. We have the head of the Department of Health and Human Services, yeah, that RFK Jr., saying a bunch more pretty crazy things recently. Yesterday, RFK Jr., basically, again, this is becoming more and more prevalent, admitted the quiet part out loud about the litmus testing of scientists within the Department of Health and Human Services. Take a listen to what he said about, proving or studying some of these wild claims that RFK makes. Take a listen.
Studies that show the countries that use the most the highest level of autism. Cuba has the lowest level in the world of acetaminophen use, and it has the lowest autism rate in the world. So this is not dispositive. It is not proof. We're doing the studies to make the proof.
Oops. Wait. What was that? You're doing the studies to prove your hypothesis that acetaminophen or Tylenol causes autism. By the way, maybe RFK, maybe it might be the case that Cuba has really low rates of autism because they don't have the state-of-the-art medical system there, and they're probably way underdiagnosing it. I don't know. Their cars are still from the 1960s. I'm sure their medicine is state-of-the-art. If you're using Cuba as an example, probably on some fairly thin ice. I don't know, just me. As if that was not, telling enough about the fact that, we'll get the proof. We'll make sure that the studies give us the proof of my hypothesis about the Tylenol. Somehow we have now, RFK is now linking circumcision, Tylenol, and autism. I wish I was making it up, but I'm not. Take a listen to this from today's cabinet meeting. Ooh. There's an ad playing. Okay, we've got to wait just a second to get to that sound. We'll have it for you in a second. Again, this was in this morning's cabinet meeting, which is pretty wild. Let me know when we've got that sound, because again, we're linking together somehow autism, circumcision, and Tylenol. Take a listen.
There's many other confirmation studies. There's two studies that show children who are circumcised early have double the rate of autism. It's highly likely because they're given Tylenol. So, you know, none of this is positive, but all of it is stuff that we should be paying attention to.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I wish RFK actually knew something about medicine and how science works. I wish he did. I really did. Because he apparently does not understand the difference between correlation and causation and the difference between what are effectively selective case study reviews and the difference between a single study that might be a case study review and actual scientific method-based longitudinal studies with time series and cross-sectional data. And if you don't know what any of that is, it's okay. But it's the difference between basically making stuff up out of thin air or a one-off example that's never really been studied at any depth and actual data-driven analysis. And RFK Jr. doesn't know the difference. And all they seem to be paying attention to, it's like the maximum level of confirmation bias. All he pays attention to is the stuff that confirm his preordained wackadoodle conspiracy theories. This is not how medicine should be practiced, ladies and gentlemen. But that's who we've got running DHHS. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Jack from Merrimack, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, well, first of all, this is part of Project 2025, which basically says that all the results of all studies and regulations and other information has predetermined, and we're going to tell you how you know, what it's supposed to be. I mean, that's exactly what it is. But let me, I think I don't know if I mentioned this on your show or not, but there's a historian by the name of Hannah Arendt, and she really gets the nail on the head with what this is all about. And she basically says several things about lying and authoritative regimes. And one of them is the purpose of lying is not to make everybody believe the lie. The purpose of lying is to confuse the matters so that nobody knows what to believe anymore. And the second thing, and this is what's really critical, is that people who don't know fact from fiction, truth from lies, don't know right from wrong, and they are the ideal subject for authoritarian rule. It doesn't make any difference if it's fascism or communism, but the ideal subject is somebody that really doesn't know what to believe anymore.
I couldn't thank you so much for that reminder, Jack. And the reason that I folded this RFK nonsense in here, before we get into this longer conversation about the lying that is coming out of ICE and the Department of Homeland Security every day, is precisely this. When on every conceivable front, you have federal government high-ranking officials that are willing to lie and distort the truth. It's not that I think the vast majority of Americans are like, oh yeah, circumcision, .. autism. No. It's precisely what Jack is talking about. It opens up this area where people who want to believe in Donald Trump, want to believe that he actually has their best interest in heart, can say, well, we don't know that that's true, or I'm going to believe this. And it has this overwhelming impact of making the truth outside of our collective knowability. We don't know what the facts are, so anything's fine. It weakens institutions, it erodes public trust. And when you have that, when you have a circumstance where, because of the confirmation bias machines that we call our cell phones, our mobile phones, our smartphones, vast swaths, tens of millions of people think that Tylenol causes autism, that circumcisions cause autism, that RFK actually has some reasonable grasp of how science and medicine is practiced. And when all of that generically leads to this overwhelming mistrust, it becomes much, much easier for a single person to stand up supported by a party of sycophants and a failing legislative branch, read MAGAs in Congress. They're not standing up to him, and it sets the table for people to distrust everything and for an authoritarian to step up and say, only I have the answer. And I'll just say this. I always want to engage in good faith debates. But over and over and over again on my text line from the conservatives that listen to this show, the things that I hear from them are basically blind faith in everything that Donald Trump and his surrogates say. There's no skepticism. There's no healthy cynicism. It's, he's going to create world peace. He's the greatest thing that ever happened. This man's a genius. Look at all these great things that he's doing. Without any healthy skepticism. I'm not asking these good faith conservatives to turn into Democrats. That's not going to happen. I don't begrudge them their right to have a different opinion. I begrudge the complete lack of any critical thinking on these points. Let's take another caller, Charles from Milwaukee. Good to see you on my caller list, sir. How are you and what you got for us?
Hey, Maggie. You bring up so many good points. It's like, man, a person would just love to be able to, we could talk all day long, but I'll,
yes, we could,
I won't,
sir,
go to Netanyahu, but I'll go to the thing with the military. So he's claiming, all right, we're sending military in so we can clean up the streets of Chicago. We can clean up the streets of DC. If I'm correct, and if I'm wrong, correct me. Did he send military to the streets of D.C. where crimes were actually taking place in the rough neighborhoods?
Most accounts are no. I've seen some of those heat maps. Charles, thanks so much for this point. I've seen some of those heat maps of where they deployed National Guard in Washington, D.C., and it is, they do not match up with the high crime areas in Washington, D.C. Like, oops-a-daisy, maybe it has nothing to do with that. Maybe it's all completely performative. But I wanted to be specific about the lies that are being told by ICE and DHS about the factual circumstances on the ground. On September 12th, ICE agents shot and killed Chicago resident Silverio Villegas Gonzalez in Franklin Park. ICE claimed that Gonzalez was shot after he, quote, seriously injured an ICE agent. The body cam footage shows that the same agent immediately after the encounter described his injuries as, quote, nothing major. On September 30th, some 300 federal agents raided an apartment building in Chicago in the dead of night with a Black Hawk helicopter. I'm not making this up. They rappelled onto the roof like it's freaking Fallujah. Okay? They ransacked apartments. They detained residents seemingly at random, including children and numerous U.S. citizens, including citizen Roderick Johnson, who said this to the Block Club of Chicago. He heard people, quote, dropping onto the roof before FBI agents kicked in his door. He was stuffed inside a van with his neighbor for hours until agents told him that the building was clear. They didn't tell me why I was being detained, Johnson said. They left people's doors open. They left money, firearms, and people's belongings completely unsecured. I'm going to come back with some more facts correcting the record about what ICE and DHS have been saying. If you want to invoke the Insurrection Act, if you want to federalize the National Guard, there had better be the actual facts on the ground to do so. Why is it okay that they're lying? We continue this discussion on the other side. Join me, 855-752-4842. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
School sports are played by humans, coached by humans, and officiated by humans. So the next time you're sitting in the stands at a school athletic event, please remember this and maintain your humanity, especially when it comes to judging and critiquing athletes, coaches, and officials. Please show your fellow humans some respect. They'll appreciate your empathy.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Does a 2025 federal law cut funding for some emergency broadcast alerts? Yes. A law signed by President Donald Trump on July 24th rescinds $9 billion, including $1.1 billion from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB. CPB, which funds NPR, PBS, and affiliates, announced it would shut down. Smaller rural stations rely heavily on CPB for weather and emergency alerts. Wisconsin stations got $8.5 million in 2024. The cuts led to a back and forth between Representative Derek Van Orden and Senator Tammy Baldwin on X over whether emergency broadcast alerts would be affected. I'm Trisha Young for Wisconsin Watch. Fact briefs are bite-sized fact checks of trending claims produced by Wisconsin Watch and GigaFact. Read more at wisconsinwatch.org.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
Hey there, Wisconsin. Tom Hartman here. Democracy is not a spectator sport, so join me each and every weekday right here on Civic Media for the Tom Hartman program from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Covering the news of the day and sharing ways for you to get off the sidelines and get active in your community, because change starts with you. Get involved and tune in to the Tom Hartman program Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. right here on your local Civic Media radio station.
Drivers, Austin Cindric here. As a NASCAR Cup Series driver of the number 2 Discount Tire Ford Mustang, there's a few rules of the road I like to tell my family and friends. Tire pressure is critical to safety because underinflated tires are more likely to fail. Plus, properly inflated tires will give you better gas mileage. Make sure to check your tire pressure at least once a month or stop by a local tire retailer for an air check.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
Download the Civic Media app in the Google Play or Apple App Store and take us everywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If Texas National Guard troops end up in Milwaukee or Madison, will it go as it's been going in Chicago, where at least one man has been shot and killed who is unarmed by ICE agents, after which ICE agents lied about the circumstances, only to have their body cam footage reveal the lie? The lying about the facts is what tells you that this is all baloney. On October 4th, Customs and Border Patrol agents shot an unarmed woman, Maramar Martinez. They claim that she provoked them by ramming their vehicle with her car. Except there's body cam footage that shows the CPB agent ramming into Martinez's vehicle, not the other way around, after which the agent says, "Do something, witch," but with a B. The agent then gets out of the vehicle and shoots Martinez, not with rubber bullets, with a gun. On October 7th, a masked federal agent is caught on camera aiming a weapon at a resident who is supposedly doing and reportedly doing nothing more than documenting his activity. This was reported by Chicago Tribune reporter Laura N. Rodriguez. There have been arrests of local officials, including Illinois' 9th Congressional District Congresswoman Kat Abu Ghazaleh, who went viral when an ICE agent slammed her to the ground. Daniel Biss, the Evanston mayor and a city alderman were aggressively arrested while trying to advocate inside of a hospital. Journalists have been detained or attacked by federal agents as well. Steve Held was detained. This is a journalist was detained by agents while covering a protest. That's illegal. A Chicago Sun-Times reporter was tear gassed and pelted with rubber bullets. Again, that's illegal. On Sunday morning, a Chicago CBS News reporter, Azel Rezai, was attacked by an ICE agent who shot a pepper ball into her car from 50 feet away. She was puking for 2 hours. Legal observers, often delineated in the Chicagoland area by their bright neon green hats that read legal observer, were also attacked by ICE agents. And if you haven't seen this footage, we're going to post it in our show notes from today that you can find at civicmedia.us/shows. Presbyterian minister Daniel Black was standing outside of an ICE facility. He had his arms outstretched to ICE agents on the roof of the building, and he was saying a prayer. In an interview, he said, "I invited them to repentance. I offered an altar call. I invited them to come and receive salvation and be part of the kingdom that is coming." When Black began to lower his arms a few seconds later, the agents fired pepper balls, which are chemical agents that cause respiratory distress and eye irritation, at his head. One struck Black in the head, exploding into a puff of white pepper smoke, which forced him, he fell down to his knees. And the agents continued to fire bullets at the pastor, who is in a black clerical shirt and collar, and laughed at him. They have roughed up elderly women. They have zip-tied small children. They're arresting people who are citizens. They are arresting people who may be here illegally but have no criminal record at all. Their use of chemical agents and rubber bullets was described as a local police chief as arbitrary and indiscriminate. It's been used on crowds doing nothing more than standing around ICE facilities as small as 10 people. On September 27th, several Customs and Border Patrol agents came to a Chicagoland police station and told the police that DHS agents would bring a blank show over the weekend, including that they would use chemical weapons, including tear gas and pepper spray on protesters. Let's be clear about what is happening here. This is not about making Chicago safer. This is not about immigration enforcement. This is state-sponsored mayhem, destruction, and intimidation that is designed to provoke unrest and response from local residents so that Donald Trump may invoke the Insurrection Act. That is what's going on here. This is illegal, unconstitutional violations of civil rights by ICE agents, federal agents, as well as the National Guard, against citizens exercising their First Amendment rights. Let me be clear here. No one can interrupt the execution of a federal law enforcement officer's duties, but you do have a right to yell at them and to protest. You can't get in their way. And by yelling at them and being near them does not give them the right to pepper spray, use chemical agents, and hit you with rubber bullets or, oh my gosh, kill you. Donald Trump is not only pitting the military against citizens, he is pitting the citizens of one state against the other along political lines. That is what the deployment of Texas National Guard in the city of Chicago is. And will they be coming here next? And if they do, and as we approach the No Kings rally on October 18th, I beg each and every one of you, do not interfere with federal law enforcement. Remain peaceful. Give them no excuse and keep your cameras rolling. Folks, the fight continues tomorrow. Please stay safe. Take care of one another. I'll be back tomorrow. It will finally be Friday, and another week of the Donald Trump terror will have come to an end. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it is always better when we stand together.
soaring high above La Crosse. This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packard. The Israeli government has signed off on the U.S. brokered Gaza peace deal, meaning phase one should be implemented immediately. ABC's Marcus Moore is in Israel.
We are at Hostage Square in central Tel Aviv as this place has become one for mourning as well as one of vigil. People here are cautiously optimistic about the current progress being made on a ceasefire in Gaza. And despite the encouraging news, the Hostage Family Forum saying that they will not rest until every single hostage is brought home.
A judge's ruling Thursday is keeping President Trump from deploying the National Guard to Chicago for 2 weeks. The judge finding no evidence that there is a danger of rebellion there. Meanwhile, a federal appeals court heard arguments over whether the president had the authority to take control of 200 Oregon National Guard troops that he had planned to deploy to Portland. New York Attorney General Letitia James indicted by a federal grand jury on bank fraud charges following pressure from President Trump. This is ABC News. Scientists are